they're into the stretch. National treasure taken on by blazing Kremis. Mead wanders inside. Still work to do with him. National treasure. Dig again. Blazing Kremis. Mead is third. It's national treasure. It's blazing Kremis putting on a show. And the Preakness, who's it gonna be? It's gonna be national treasure. John Velasquez gets his Preakness. And Bob Baffert.
We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's Off to the Races. Here's Nick Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Hope you're enjoying this Memorial Day weekend. The weather is not only nice in Virginia, it's nice up and down the Eastern Seaboard, nice in Louisville, Kentucky, nice in Arcadia, California, not a factor on any of the racing action, at least today. And we'll take a look at all of those races on Off to the Races. You heard in the opening of the show, the Preakness Stretch Run. What a thrilling conclusion to the Preakness Stakes. We'll speak with winning jockey John Velasquez here in about 15 minutes on Off to the Races. Frank Vespi is living the dream with Paget Bennett, who will join us. They had weren't done after the Preakness on Saturday. The sales was occurring at Timonium Monday and Tuesday of this week, just up the road from Old Hilltop there in Baltimore. And Frank Vespi will speak with the sales director, Paget Bennett, here in about a half hour or so. And of course, Derby Bill Watson on this Memorial Day weekend, remembering those who served our country and paid the ultimate price, will join us on Off to the Races here in about 45 minutes or so to handicap some races. And he has some very appropriate bumper music already lined up. But let's go back to the Preakness last week. A field scratch down to 7 with the late week scratch of First Mission left a field of 7, including the Kentucky Derby winner, Mage. The odds finally got right. We were watching them on Friday and Saturday, just wondering what was going on. They almost got right. Longest prices in the field were Chase the Chaos and Coffee with Chris. Mage, of course, the Kentucky Derby winner, went off at about 8-5. I think it's 7-5, actually. But it turned into be a stretch duel with National Treasure in Blazing Sevens. Mage just looming behind. Larry Colmus brings us the entire call of the Preakness.
They're all in line. We are ready for the start. They're off in the Preakness. It was a very good start for National Treasure today. Mage came out pretty well. In fact, he's going to be close. There goes Coffee with Crystal, moving up on the outside. Blazing Sevens away, running in third. Mage closer to the pace today. He's 3 lengths off the lead with 1 lap to go. Red Route 1 is next, then Perform. And late running long shot, Chase the Chaos chases National Treasure into that first turn. He's on top by 2 lengths. Goes by that opening quarter mile in 23.95 seconds. Pace is a moderate one. Coffee with Chris, the Maryland runner, is second. Then Blazing Sevens on the outside. Javier Castellano finds a cozy spot with the Kentucky Derby winner, Mage. They're 4 lengths off the lead, entering the backstretch. Route 1 is right to the inside. Then comes Perform and Chase the Chaos. The half mile, a pedestrian one, was 48.92 seconds. Advantage, National Treasure, who heads up the backstretch 3/4 of a length ahead. Coffee with Chris is second. Red Route 1 has made a move on the inside. Blazing Sevens is 3 wide. Mage is right behind them. He's still 3 lengths behind with a half mile left. Then Perform and Chase the Chaos. Around the far turn, National Treasure is the leader. Javier Castellano has now taken Mage to the outside. He's moved up into third as Blazing Sevens takes on front-running National Treasure coming toward the top of the stretch. National Treasure off the turn in front. Blazing Sevens alongside. Mage is 2.5 lengths behind them. Red Route 1 cuts the corner, and they're into the stretch. National Treasure taken on by Blazing Sevens. Mage wanders inside. Still working.
gets his Preakness, and Bob Baffert has won his 8th one.
Yeah, concluding an up and down day for Bob Baffert, which was followed by an up and down week. Baffert won a stakes race earlier in the day with Arabian Lion. We'll have the Belmont field as we know it now here in a few moments. Arabian Lion being part of that field, and later had a disaster, a tragedy on the racetrack in a stakes race, and then comes back and wins the Preakness. It just was such an up and down day for Baffert. Baffert also, in winning the Preakness this week, also lost an appeal on a court case on the 21 Derby. So he literally won the 23 Preakness and lost the 21 Derby in the same week, the 21 Derby with Medina Spirit and the overage with Beta Methazone being the fault there. So up and down week for Baffert. Looked at the time of the race, 1:55 12/100ths of a second. And at first I thought when it clicked on, I was like, that's a pretty fast race. Went back later and looked at some of the times here recently. It's the slowest Preakness since Justify won the 2018 Preakness as part of his Triple Crown. There were some American Pharoah's Preakness was like 1:58. So the slowest recently, but the fastest, or one of the fastest in recent years before Justify's Preakness, they rarely got below 1:55 or even 1:56. You have to go all the way back to Big Brown before that. So congratulations to the connections there. 5-2, National Treasure paid $780 for the win, and just a solid performance there. Want to also recap the race which was run just before the Preakness, the James Murphy Stakes. This had the heavy favorite Nagarick, who was a Grand Motion horse, and Larry Colmus has the call of the Murphy.
As they round the far turn, Fantastic again is the leader. Nagarock is now guided to the outside, and he's making his move, and he's making it now. And Nagarock has taken the lead as they come to the top of the stretch. Fantastic again, back running in second on the inside. Nagarock opens up by two. Fantastic again, still second. Then Kingfish Stevens, and circling the drain, but it's all Nagarock. Nagarock and Claudia Pratt running up the score in the James W. Murphy. They're going to win it by 4.5 lengths in the end. And then it was Fantastic again, circling the drain, and Kingfish Stevens. The final time was 1:33 flat. That is a new course record, Grand Motion.
Yes, at the course record was Nagarock. So congratulations. Great ride there by Flavian Pratt. Just won it in the clear by 3.25 lengths is the official margin of victory. Of course, we'll watch that horse. Could be a factor in the $500,000 stakes races Colonial Downs has this summer, the Virginia Derby and the Secretariat Stakes, which is being brought to Colonial Downs for the first time. Hopefully it stays there. So we'll watch that. I moved them up to third on the Turf 10 list that you can find on the racingbiz.com. We'll talk to Frank about another opinionated article I have on the Racing Biz a little bit later in the show. But now let's bring in with his apt bumper music, Daryl Wood, joining us on Off to the Races in the leadoff position. Good morning, Daryl.
Good morning, Nick. Happy post-Preakness Day.
Yeah, happy post-Preakness, happy Memorial Day, and hope everything is fine where you are this holiday weekend. Just looking at the Preakness and looking at the events coming up this summer at Colonial Downs, we're about 6 weeks away, I think, from live racing. It sounds about right. Things are, I'm sure, the grass is growing, and things are really starting to come to life for live racing in Virginia this summer.
Yeah, I'll be spending a lot of time out there starting next week, but if Harrison Young, who was the track superintendent, has been posting pictures of the grass and the dirt track And the training actually starts on those surfaces in just over 3 weeks. So, yeah, we are close. The barn area is going to open 3 weeks in advance of the meet itself. So, yeah, be able to see it up close. But the turf course just looks wonderful in his pictures. And the dirt track, of course, a little bit underrated, but it's a mile and a quarter oval, and hopefully it gets its fair share of use. But, yeah, the big news, the Colonial Downs Festival of Racing, it's being called on Saturday, August 12th, that hosts the Arlington Million and the Beverly D, both Grade 1 stakes, and you just mentioned the Secretariat Stakes, a Grade 2 event. But the formal name, I think, it's, if it's not out yet, it's going to be out here next week, but the Colonial Downs Festival of Racing is what it's going to be called, and August 12th, it should be the biggest day in New Kent history as far as bodies and handle.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It's the opening day, I think, is July 13th, if I remember my calendar right. And also the Arlington Million is part of this card as well. Johnny Velasquez, who we'll have on the show in mere moments, has won now, getting his Preakness, just about every major race you can think of. He has not won the Arlington Million. So wouldn't that be nice for him to come to Colonial Downs and check that box with the Arlington Million? Hopefully we'll get him there as well. What other thoughts on the upcoming meet at Colonial Downs? That's with the meet concluded at Shenandoah. Pretty much the next big item in Virginia racing.
Yeah, we're switching gears. And yeah, the summer meet this year is nine weeks in length, running Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 1:30. So weekend racing opportunities for fans to come out, a little more so than in the past couple years when it was on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But yeah, the meet wraps up with the Virginia Derby on September the 9th. So 9 big weeks, and looking forward to a lot of time spent in New Kent. And just as an aside, Nick, today at the Rosie's OTBs, there is another leg of the Pick'em Handicapping Contest. Free contest. The grand prize for this is going to be two tickets to the 2024 Kentucky Derby. It's a phenomenal prize. It's, I believe, a $6,000 value. But the only way to get in it is to get to the OTBs on Saturdays and play this contest. It's free to get in. Prize money each week, but the grand prize is quite intriguing.
No, it really is. Those are not easy tickets. They are expensive tickets. So yeah, that's a great contest for the OTBs. Maybe just list those quickly, and we'll move on to John. But where are the OTB locations in Richmond?
Yeah, so the folks, the contest races today and the locations are at ColonialDowns.com. But the Rosie sites are in Richmond, are in Hampton, Benton, Collinsville, at the New Kent track itself, and then up at Dumfries. And there's two OTBs to play as well: the Breakers location in Henrico and the Buckets OTB location in Chesapeake. So eight different ways to play the contest today. Get your entries in by, I think it's around 3:30, and you could be on your way to Churchill Downs next year for a heck of a prize.
Yeah, it's certainly worth a shot. Thank you, Daryl. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
You got it, Nick. Sounds good.
Great. Daryl Wood joining us on Off to the Races. And next up in the Triple Crown is the Belmont Stakes. And as one of the horses already committed to going to the Belmont Stakes, as we get some Puerto Rican bumper music for our next guest, John Velasquez is National Treasure, winner of the Preakness, and earmarked for the Belmont Stakes. Good morning, John Velasquez. Thanks for joining us on Off to the Races, and congratulations on your Preakness win.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. It was a thrilling stretch run in the Preakness last week. We mentioned earlier in the show this was one of the races that you had not won. You've won just about everything else. But that was just a thrilling ride, and I want to thank you personally because I picked your horse, National Treasure. But in that stretch run, you take us through the race, but we're really interested in that stretch run. Do you think that you were headed in that race, or were you aware of it, or take us through the race, and especially that stretch run with the Blazing Sevens.
You know, one of those races that you dream to have. You know, obviously not much pace, got to the lead pretty easy. You know, and when we got contested, you know, started kind of picking it up past the 3-8 pole and the 5-16 pole. We started picking it up. By the time we got to the 3-16 pole, you know, we put head in head, and when Gio and that situation, you ask him your horse to give you the best they can, and he did. I mean, he responded for everything I wanted to do, and for us to, you know, start getting away from the other horse right before the wire, what a feeling, you know. Just you couldn't have a better feeling than that when you ask him your horse to do everything they can, and they're giving you everything. So you couldn't be any happy. That's for sure.
In one of the great moments after the race, I should say, was when Javier Castellano came up to you and slapped you a high five. We got to see a little bit of that just before the on-horse interview. He got his Kentucky Derby win finally. You got your Preakness win finally. What did he say to you?
No, he congratulated me. You know, he obviously was very happy for me to win it, and you know, like, I was very happy for him that he won his first Kentucky Derby, and it's very very fun, because I mean, we when we won the Kentucky Derby, and we walking out, and his picture was on the TV, and he has 15 derbies he had not won, and the guys go, "Oh, come on, Javier, has not won this one?" As well. And I just turned around and I said, "Javier, yours coming. So don't worry, you can't worry about it. Yours is coming." I just didn't know that 20 minutes later was going to be his turn, though. But so we know he was out. He knows that I was very happy for him when he won it, and when I won it in my first Preakness, so he was very happy for me as well. So yeah, they're very nice to have that done for us and our ages. You know, obviously he's 45, I'm 51. For us to doing what we're doing right now, it's a dream come true.
It really must be. Heard earlier on the Mike Smith, or you were mentioning, talking on the Steve Bick show, I should say, with, you know, Mike Smith really sort of has taken this veteran jockey experience to another level, you know, really professional. Your career has certainly, you were an accomplished rider when you won the Virginia Derby 18 years ago now with English Channel, but now it's like a late career boost. You're starting to win derbies on a regular basis. You know, tell us about just what it, mentioning, you know, you were born in 1971. Tell us, you know, the preparations and just the roles that maybe Mike Smith and some of the other jockeys that are riding now late into their lifespans, you know, the things that you have to do.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I think Mike has opened the door for all of us right behind him, you know, because in my early career and my 30s, and everybody says once you get to, you know, 40s and 45, you know, your business goes away, or, you know, people don't give you opportunities. And Mikey has passed all that, you know, and I got to my 40s, and obviously Mikey winning all these races, you know, so opened the door for me. It's like, you know what, if I'm healthy enough, and I'm doing well, I'm getting opportunities to ride these horses, I stick around for a little longer, though, you know, and that's what kind of gets me coming back, though, you know, so riding good horses, getting the opportunities. But yeah, Mike kind of broke that barrier, you know, that stigma that once you get in your 40s and mid-40s, you know, that's it, you're done, you know, like, no, you don't get your opportunities and everything. Actually, Mike, it opened up for all of us, right behind us, and for those of us that are still healthy and given the opportunities, here we are, though. I'm 51, and I'm having fun riding, you know, these kind of races and winning. It's very unusual, though, you know, so, and especially in our sport, so, you know, you have to be lucky and blessed enough to be healthy enough, you know, to be at 51 and doing what we're doing, just like Mikey is at 56. So, yeah, very, very blessed. Absolutely.
We played some Puerto Rican music at the beginning of this segment of the show, and in honor of your win in the Preakness, and your the jockey school at Puerto Rico, you've really been appreciative of what that education taught you, as well as, of course, your father, who was a jockey as well. Have you heard any response, from Puerto Rico? Do you get a chance to go back about that? What's just been the response after winning the Preakness?
Well, let's clarify something first. My father was never a jockey. I did went to the jockey school, and obviously it's been one of my first steps to be, the jockey that I am. You know, without having that education and learning Puerto Rico, I wouldn't have the opportunity to be here. So my agent in Puerto Rico is very good friend with Andrew Cordero, and that's how my connection came to come to New York. If you're probably thinking about being my father, me, Edgar Cordero was like my father. He's like my father. We're still together, and that's what got me here. And I always said, like, he's like my father, and having him, having him with me all these years, obviously, from the beginning to even to now, it's been a blessing in disguise for me, to have the career that I'm having so far, and all everything that I learned from him. I think it would have taken me much longer, to learn the craft and everything that I know if I wouldn't have him, and from the beginning when I started riding. So I think that's what you get into where my father came from. So my father here, Andrew Cordero, but my father, my real father, no, he was not a jockey.
My apologies. That was some early morning research, and I must have picked up the wrong Velasquez in terms of looking that up this morning. One of the things I did find out this morning, I'd forgotten this. We mentioned English Channel 18 years ago, but you also rode to Haas 25 years ago this year to a win in the Breeders' Cup. To Haas, a famous horse from Colonial Downs, in the sense that he won that one allowance race in between the two Breeders' Cup victories that he had in 1996 and the one that you delivered. It wasn't the only time you rode to Haas, but you did deliver the last win, probably his greatest win, 25 years ago. What was that moment like?
Oh, incredible. And a little bit backstory of him, but I was riding him in 1996, and I actually won the race on him in Saratoga, and Michael decided to run it right back, like 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later or somewhere. And I don't know if it was Virginia or somewhere. And I couldn't go in and ride him. And anyway, he ended up scratched the horse and put him back in New York and took me off and put Gary Stevenson. And that's how Gary Stevenson ended up on the horse, though. It's like I was kind of really frustrated with Michael. But then 2 years later, he gave me the opportunity to ride him. So very, very blessed. And to have the opportunity with Michael Dickinson, that he gave me the opportunity. It's funny because that year, I think I was riding Sixth Breeders' Cup, and he came to the jockey's room, and he says, if you are going to win a Breeders' Cup today, and actually I was riding another horse for him too that day, it will be this one. I think this horse is coming, right for this race. Everything's coming. It's coming really good. I think this will be your winner. And sure enough, he was 100% right. Every time I see him now, I always tell him that this is where he started. My career kind of started to a different level ever since 1998, riding the Haas. So I always blame him. Oh, I don't blame him. I just tell him what he created.
Yeah, well, we're happy with the results for sure. You mentioned Michael Dickinson. That's only one of a number of trainers that you have ridden for. This weekend, you're scheduled on nine mounts by five different trainers. What do you? How do you handle riding so many horses for so many different trainers? Because they're not all alike. I mean, there's some similarities, but the direction maybe that you get some of the instruction, or you're just sort of that veteran rider where they basically say ride them as you find them.
Well, everybody's different. Everybody has different ways of training and how they like to, position the horses. But on the other hand, I do my homework, and I like to see what are the expectations or the anticipations of what could happen in the race. So I always have a little bit of input, when they give me instructions and stuff like that. So try to do a little bit of what the trainers are, or less they actually are really, like, you know, like, positive that they want to do something with the horse. And then if they want me to do something, I will try to what they want me to do. But for the most part, they leave it open, because obviously they know that races are run differently once that gate opens. So it's good to have that opportunity when that gate opens, that you are on top of the horse, you're in charge of that. So by doing homework and talking to the trainers and see the possibilities, what can happen in the races, I think it's much better to leave it open like that than just having one set of instructions, because once the gate opens, it's really difficult to do that. So I'm very, very open to change things that happens. And obviously, you know, for us to be successful and to have a career like that I have, I think my mouth has helped me a lot, and sometimes it gets me in trouble, but I think has helped me a lot more than more trouble. So it has to be a partnership, obviously, between the trainers and the horses and us, but I think so far it has worked on my advantage. Yeah, definitely.
My mouth gets me in trouble all the time. It already has in the course of this interview. With two races that might be on your calendar this summer, you have both won. One is the Virginia Derby we mentioned with English Channel, and you've won the Secretariat Stakes, which is a Colonial Downs this year, a few years ago with Carrick. You have won just about every race. One of the races that you haven't won is the Arlington Million, which will be run at Colonial Downs this year. Is that I know it's a couple months away and a lot can happen between now and then, but do you have thoughts about riding in Virginia?
I would love to, though, to tell you the truth, because that's one of the races that, you know, we always look into, you know, the summertime to when the Arlington was running, and obviously they moved the race. I mean, I would love to have the opportunity, you know, to go and ride her. Absolutely. I would love to go there. Yeah, and not just ride her. I would love to win the race, too.
We're speaking with Preakness-winning jockey John Velasquez this morning on Off to the Races. Just going to offer one more question here. It's the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's romp through the Triple Crown. I'm hoping that you got a chance to see that magnificent statue. If you didn't see it at the Derby, maybe at the Preakness. What are your memories of Secretariat? You were born 2 years before. You were only two when he won the Triple Crown, but in this being a Virginia bred and just a landmark milestone anniversary with Secretariat, what are your recollections of Secretariat growing up?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about Secretariat until I came to the States. So, you know, I didn't grow up on the racetrack, and I didn't grow up in, you know, racing and everything. I started watching racing in 1988. That was the first year I went to the jockey school in Puerto Rico. Obviously, I heard about Secretariat once I, you know, came to the States and knew everything about the Triple Crowns. Well, not everything, but at least heard of it, and the Breeders' Cups and Kentucky Derbies and so on. So, you know, the big races, since I was not, you know, race and racetrack. So I learned everything as I went, basically, as I go, you know. But I know about him, or what I heard, and all the replays that I've seen. Obviously, a great horse. What a horse. I mean, you just got to say, it's like all the replays I've seen and everything I've seen about him. It's like, I wish I was, you know, old enough, or at least being around when he ran, because I mean, obviously loving the races and knowing about the horses right now in the racetrack. I mean, I would love to be there. Obviously, I was too young. I was only 2 years old, and then I came here when I was 18 years old. So yeah, everything I see about a great horse that I wish I was around.
Yeah, one of the rare things where you're sort of like the rest of us, I guess, with Secretariat. I never got a chance to see him either, and really didn't become aware of him until I was like in college, about the same time that you were entering the jockey school. Well, congratulations on the Preakness win, and we certainly thank you for spending some time with us this morning live on Off to the Races, and good luck in the Belmont Stakes. And again, we just really appreciate you spending some time with us this morning.
All right, thank you for having me.
Great. John Velasquez joining us on Off to the Races this morning. And when we come back on Off to the Races, we will be living the dream with Frank Vespi. Sammy Hagar reminding us to remember the heroes on this Memorial Day weekend. Derby Bill in about a half hour as well. And you're listening to the Off to the Races, powered by theracingbiz.com.
Live racing at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races rolls on every Wednesday through Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern through March 1st, and every Thursday through Saturday through the month of October. Mark your calendars for Friday, August 25th, for the 15th renewals of the Grade 2 $1 million Charlestown Classic and Grade 3 $750,000 Charlestown Oaks, now the richest three-year-old filly sprint stakes race in North America. So come see us here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Learn more at Hollywood Casino Charlestown.
Virginia's horse racing and horse breeding industry is built on the talents, skills, labors, and passions of incredible people working in all parts of the Commonwealth. Horses fuel the economy, power tourism, reinforce agriculture, and create jobs. From farmers to blacksmiths, trainers to vets, and racehorse staff to surrounding small businesses, the local horse racing and breeding industry alone supports 5,300 jobs and has an overall economic impact of $542 million annually. Over 5,400 horses are owned by Virginians, and another 2,400 out-of-state horses are boarded at Virginia farms. Last year, over $4 billion was wagered on horse racing in Virginia. Learn more about this thriving agribusiness at virginiahorseracing.com. And be sure to enjoy the Colonial Downs Summer Thoroughbred Racing Season in New Kent, which runs from July 13th through September 9th, every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday afternoon at 1:30.
Welcome back, everybody. Frank Vespi here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Hope you were listening just a bit earlier. Had Nick Hahn had a conversation with Johnny Velasquez, the Preakness winning jockey aboard National Treasure, acknowledged as kind of one of the good guys in the game. And the Preakness was pretty much the only significant hole in his Hall of Fame resume. He's been in the Hall of Fame for like a decade already, and that was about the only race of consequence that he hadn't won. He can now check that box. So good to hear from John Velasquez, Preakness winning jockey. Now, 2 days after the Preakness, pretty much a lot of the same people, at least a lot of the people in the industry, reconvened in Timonium Monday and Tuesday. They had Facing Tipton Mid-Atlantic held its annual two-year-olds in training sale. Nearly $35 million worth of horses changed hands at the sale. Here to kind of tell us what was going on, Facing Tipton Mid-Atlantic sales director, Paget Bennett. Paget, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Frank. It's great to be with you.
Well, we appreciate you making a little bit of time on a Saturday. I know there are things to do on Saturday mornings, probably involving horses, that don't involve talking to me, but we appreciate you taking a few minutes here. I want to start with this. For people who are not sort of immersed in the racing bubble, I want to kind of ask some real basic questions about the sale. So the sale was Monday and Tuesday. When did the horses actually arrive in Timonium?
So the horses, we had many horses ship in on Derby. So people were starting to come in and set up on Oaks Day. Everybody kind of knows that calendar date. Then horses, the vans were rolling in before sunup on Derby Day. So everybody really gets excited about being on the dirt surface, so they love to come early and be on it as long as they can prior to the sale.
And then in between, so they arrive, say, Derby Day, so about 2 weeks out, and then the following week they have the breezes. Talk about that.
So we breeze Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for this sale. We do 200 a day approximately, and just try to make it easy, not easy days, but easy days for the consigners as well as the buyers, so they don't have to stare at a lot of horses. It's a lot to process. getting horses to the paddock and on the track, and then taken care of afterwards. So we do three good days. So I think all 3 days we were done by 2 o'clock. So it we started at 8 and finished at 2 on the track, and then obviously they went and had all their vet work done, so that that info could be available to buyers by the weekend.
Now, so most of the horses are going to breeze, most of them breezed an eighth of a mile, a few breezed a quarter, so not too far, but how important is that breeze in your view to establishing the value of a horse?
Well, it is. I mean, people need to see how they move across the track, you know, how they gallop out. The gallop out seem to be very important to buyers. I spoke with a lot of people up in the stands that were doing their own clocking and getting a lot of the gallop out. So a lot of the buyers want that info, and they base a lot of their decisions on what they see over the track.
Yeah, it's actually, it is interesting. If you go back and look at the results, they're actually going to pretty closely track how the horses, you know, the horses that breezed an eighth and 10 flat are going to go for more money than the ones that breezed in 10 and 2 on average. Obviously, it's all averages, but it is interesting how closely that tracks.
It is, and you know, that is what is important to so many people. There are people that they won't look at anything other than the fastest horses of a sale. But, you know, there are others out there that they 10 and 2, that works. But for the most part, with the videos and people being able to watch over and over, perhaps maybe they wanted to say, oh, they had a headwind or a tailwind or whatever. So there's so many variables that can play a part of under-tack show results. But, you know, it was a good, safe surface. The crew at the fairgrounds does a great job year after year with the surface, and that's what has made this sale so popular with our consigners.
Yeah, I did want to ask that because, you know, I referenced at the top here that you sold almost $35 million worth of horses at this sale. Last year, it was over 37, including a $3.5 million horse. This year's topper was an Arrogate filly who went for $1 million. But what is it that, you know, this sale has really become kind of a powerhouse and a really important stop for horsemen, for people looking to buy and sell horses? What has made this such an important sale?
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, the time on the calendar. You know, we capture, you know, the crowd when they're in town for the second jewel of the Triple Crown. So that's a big plus. Plus having the successful horses coming out of the sale. I mean, when the Mid-Atlantic 2-year-old sale of 2022 can claim the Derby, the 2023 Derby winner, that's a big feather in our cap, and it just makes people from all over the world realize that this sale is not to be missed if they're shopping for a racehorse.
In fact, too, I bumped into Ramiro Restrepo, one of the co-owners of Mage, one of the people who bought Mage out of your sale last year. And I said, hey, Ramiro, you buying? He said, we got two. So it looks like they came back and they brought their wallets with them.
Oh, absolutely. He is so excited, and he's such a great person for the game. And it was such a great story for the whole group, that the ownership of Mage, and I couldn't be happier for him. And he just handled everything so well, and was, and you know, even in the, you know, the outcome on last Saturday, it wasn't what everybody had hoped, but he's still tickled with his horse, and there's, you know, down the road they'll be back to fight another day. So yeah, we had I just found some statistics, and we sold 32 horses to foreign buyers. We sold 38 horses to Maryland residents. So it's kind of fun, just the different regions that our buyers come from, but we sold 17 to the Koreans, so they've always been strong at this sale, and then Canadians and people from England, etc., and Middle East. So everybody knows where Timonium is now.
Which hasn't always been the case. Now, we're talking with Paget Bennett of Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic. Who are these buyers? Are these, in general, are these going to be what the industry calls end users, people who are going to, who are buying these horses to put on the racetrack and race them? Or
absolutely, or absolutely. They're going to, you know, buying it at the high end. So obviously they're going for the big, targeting the big races and, you know, get a few graded stakes wins under their belts on these horses. And then I'm sure the fillies will be, you know, sold on as fancy broodmare prospects at the selected breeding stock sale. So I think they have some fun with this one. And then, you know, if they can sell it and use that money to buy again, that's what a lot of them do.
Now, you guys have added something new this year. You've had this two-year-old in training sale for a long time right after the Preakness. You've added a second two-year-old in training sale next month. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we had a lot of requests because people couldn't get in our May sale in the past, so we turn a lot of horses away just based on we can only stable 600 horses, and that's with the addition of two tents that we put up with temporary stalls. So we'd been asked by a lot of the consigners to please consider having a second sale. OBS does do another sale in June, but from what I hear, it gets a little hot and toasty down there in June to have a horse sale. So people have asked, and the company has agreed to, we're doing a June sale in a month. So it'll be, we breeze June 26th, and the sale is June 28th. So we look forward to seeing everybody back on the grounds. We're still processing entries, but we've had good support. We do have some Florida consigners coming back up, and some of our regular consigners from the Carolinas, et cetera, who love the track. So, yeah, we'll be back in June at Timonium, and hopefully we'll have a fancy horse come out of that sale, and it'll give us more momentum for years to come.
All right, there you have it. So if you missed your chance to buy a horse in Timonium earlier this week, you're going to get another crack at it next month. Paget Bennett from Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic, thanks so much for joining us here on Off to the Races.
Thanks for having me, Frank, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Nick, we'll kick it back to you. A lot of money changing hands in Timonium this past week.
Yeah, how about getting the Kentucky Derby winner Mage out of that sale? That was sort of a coup, I think, for Timonium. Mage is not going to run in the Belmont Stakes, but will be still a formidable field here with National Treasure, Forte, Tappet Trice, Angel of Empire, Arabian Lion, Archangelo, finally said that right. One of the few things I've gotten right this month. Actually, I had a good week last week. Hit Show, Red Route 1, Kings Barnes, Reincarnate, Raise Cane, Prove Worthy, who's a maiden winner, and Il Morocco. I'm not going to try and try that one again. And Sun Thunder, I've seen on some lists and not on others. But full field for the Belmont Stakes. Almost double, Frank, the Preakness.
Yeah, one thing I think I saw that they've had some minor issues with Kings Barnes, and that may make it hard for him to make the Belmont.
The Derby winner.
Yeah, it's obviously we would like to have seen a bigger field than the Preakness. Seven's a little light, and certainly we would like to have seen that, which is something you wrote about this week on theracingbiz.com.
Yep, up this morning on the biz is an opinion that I have, and this is just my sole opinion, that they should run the Preakness this weekend. And really, whether it's today, I wouldn't rule out Sunday even, but this is just, it's a weekend in a town where a lot of, in a state, when you're looking at D.C. and down the road, you can really sort of make it a festival. It gets out of the shadow of the Derby. It's not a drastic change to the Triple Crown. You can read about my thoughts on that on theracingbiz.com. But I know I'm singing to the choir here and you, but there are a lot of traditionalists that don't want to touch the Preakness. And I just think it should be run this weekend and then just simply run the Belmont Stakes 3 weeks from now. There would be a couple of issues in moving it, but I think the gains outweigh the losses for sure. What do you think?
Well, no, obviously I agree with you. I mean, look, the Preakness or the Triple Crown schedule is set in 1969. Just about literally every single thing in racing is different today from what it was in 1969, except for this schedule. And this schedule, if you were creating the Triple Crown today, you wouldn't give even 1 second's thought to running two of the races within 2 weeks of each other, because nobody races horses that way anymore, and nobody handles horses, nobody schedules races like that. It wouldn't even be on the radar. So at some point, you know, I value tradition as well, but tradition should be like the, you know, the Mr. Rogers comfy sweater you slip on. It shouldn't be a straitjacket that binds you to a past that is no longer relevant. And I feel like that's kind of how we treat the Triple Crown tradition. And
boy, I wish I would have used that as a closing line in the article. That's brilliant.
I don't think anybody's ever said that about me before.
can we edit that? We finally get to see Forte in the Triple Crown. He had one examination and knocked him out of two races, which just tells you the standard, with 14 days and the time between races is old. So anyway, we got to move on, Frank. We'll talk a lot more about that in the upcoming weeks.
All right. Sounds good, Nick. Have a good weekend. Say hi to Bill for me.
All right. Certainly will. And thanks for the hospitality last weekend in Baltimore. That was great.
Always a pleasure.
We, Frank Vespi, living the dream on Off to the Races this morning. And as forecasted, Derby Bill remembering Memorial Day weekend. And he joins us now on Off to the Races. Derby Bill, I know it wasn't the outcome you wanted in the Preakness last week, but a chance to make up for it this weekend. While there are not a whole lot of grade ones, and that was sort of my point as well, is there's not a whole lot of racing this weekend. There are a number of stakes races. The grade ones, the two grade three races are in... at least on this side, earlier today, and then the winning colors at Churchill, Grade Ones at Santa Anita on Monday. But one of the big races you were looking at it's the best betting race probably of the weekend is this Curtania at Churchill Downs later today. How are you doing this morning, Derby Bill?
Always good. Good to hear WT, the horse racing owner. And a driver of the sport out in Oklahoma, so good for Toby Kiefer and Memorial Day to everybody. Derby Bill did register for the draft in 1977, so it was the scariest day of my life because I'm a big target for opponents of war.
Yeah, no, that's. I think we had to do. I did some sort of registration back in 1985. I remember when they brought that back. Let's first get your thoughts on the Preakness last week. What did you think of National Treasure's win?
Yeah, Bob Baffert's a story. Obviously, eighth win in Baltimore. He's as hot as the Orioles.
Yeah, no, the Orioles. Are they still in second place?
The Orioles are best start they've ever had in 100 years, I think. And against the spread, they're 33-17 for the Degenerates. So making a few bucks on the Orioles. The Preakness have made bucks only on the future bet. Had National Treasure in the future bet at 13-1. So cash a ticket. Cash a ticket on a future bet, which is a rare occasion. But it was the first future bet for the Preakness, and I hope they have a future bet for the Virginia Derby down the road, or the Arlington Million have a, you know, advanced wagering, so you can get some odds like 13-1. Not many people got 13-1 on National Treasure.
Churchill Downs certainly knows how to execute the future bets. That's something they've proven year after year. This Kurtania at Churchill Downs, a mile and a half on the turf. This is for fillies and mares 4 years and older, so it's kind of an interesting race here. I have not checked for scratches. I did see there were 12 horses in the field, including Sparkle Blue, the favorite that broke his maiden at Colonial Downs, and one ran second in the Virginia Oaks. 7-2 isn't actually, you know, a big vote of confidence on the favorite. And you, when you look at this field, you can understand why. What do you, the mile and a half? What do you think about this, Kurtania?
Yeah, it's definitely the biggest betting race of the day for me. I mean, there's 12 horses, and nobody's under, you know, $10 horse will probably win the race, 10 or more. So you're looking at Sinfiltrate, probably $12. Lovely Princess, probably about $14. And interesting, the most interesting one there is Sparkle Blue. Sparkle Blue is, I got some whistling over here. I don't know what's going on. Whistling in my ear there, buddy. Hopefully it's not Dixie, but Sparkle Blue, it's probably Mike Off is a favorite. Might remember some connections there to that horse. That might be the top pick there. Get you $9 on that horse. So, it's a good way race to throw some cash at, because you're going to, you know, looking at it, one of the better betting races of the day compared to the Preakness.
Vincent Chaminade gets the mount there. This is a hard-spun filly, a four-year-old. Actually has not gone the distance. This is the first time at this distance for him. There, a couple of these horses have gone a mile and a half, have proven themselves. Verburnum is actually a horse that ran at Colonial Downs, ran third there at Colonial Downs last summer for Kelsey Danner. I kind of like this horse, Sinfiltry, I think is how you pronounce this horse, who is 1-2 in a row. The last one at a mile and a half, Luis Saez, who can just gallop along. I think he's a real threat on the front end here at Churchill Downs. So I kind of like the four here a little bit. Go ahead, Bill.
There you go. We got about $12 on that one to win, probably, if he wires the field like he did at Keeneland. Last race, he just ripped it. It's just like Baffert's horse in the Preakness. Just take the lead and go. And he won, and he got like 100 buyer figure there. And the Uncle Mo filly, like you said, gets Irad Jr. up. So you might not get 9-2 on that horse. But, yeah, I like him and Sparkle, her and Sparkle Blue will probably be a nice exacta for you to throw $50 at.
yeah, as bad as a Derby weekend was for me. I didn't win a whole lot there. I had a lot at Pimlico. It was just a good weekend. It's great when you go to the track and walk out heavier than when you walked in. Let's look at the Soaring Softly Stakes at Belmont Stakes today, Belmont Park today, a grade 3, 7 furlongs, just 6 in this field. It really sets up well for Love Appeals, who's the 6-5 morning line favorite. Only a 6-horse field. What do you think about the Soaring Softly?
Yeah, I love the field because the 6-horse field limits the wagering opportunities. I went with Queen Picasa, probably about 12, 5-1, grade 1, half-brother to Acclaim, and just liked the odds and didn't like the race. So there's too many others with the Obey at Delaware and Monmouth Park running. My goodness, it's Santa Anita and Shoemaker Mile just came out, and the Penn National came out for next Friday with your some of your turf already. Horses, Major.
Yeah,
I think it was Major.
The Penn Mile PP's already out. I have to look for. Yeah, that's great. I love it when they have those out early.
Oh yeah, Friday night racing.
You mentioned the Obeya a mile and a 16th at Delaware. Do you have a selection there? Maybe with Traverse, who's a horse I really like in this group.
Yeah, there's I like a horse called Tap the Faith. Just bred well to tap it on the tap it line, and Christopher Clement on the Christopher Clement just tears that track up at Delaware when he ships in. So I'm gonna go with Tape the Faith at about $11.
Okay. Any other horses that you like this weekend? We got about 45 seconds left.
Well, the Shoemaker Mile is Monday. I didn't get a chance to look at much at it yet, but it's just an excellent card at Santa Anita for the holiday for you guys cooking your burgers and stuff. But DeJure is in that race, and there's a couple. You got the Hollywood Gold Cup that day too, so you know it's not the slowest weekend for degeneracy. It might be the slow weekend for the national public following horse racing, but for the degenerates, it's a solid stakes weekend.
Yeah, with the extra weekend day of racing. Well, thanks, Derby Bill, for your your picks this week. Good luck, and three Grade Ones at Santa Anita. That include horses like Macadamia is going to be running in that race in the Game League, which is the fifth race on that day on Memorial Day. The Shoemaker Mile has DeJure looking to actually break his maiden. It's hard to believe. That horse is just a hard running second every time. And then Country Grammar, with over $14 million in earnings, is in the Hollywood Gold Cup, one of two Baffert horses in that group. Well, thanks for spending your Saturday morning, part of your Saturday morning with us on Off to the Races. Want to thank Daryl Wood. John Velasquez gave us a great interview. Paget Bennett, the sales director at Fast Tipton Timonium Mid-Atlantic, also joined us with Frank Vespi segment, and you just heard from Derby Bill. Matt Josephs, great job on the board. We'll talk to you next week, post time for Off to the Races, 10 o'clock.